We are together and we have alcohol.
Ugh, as things are meant to be.
Amen. To pineapple sake and to recording face to face.
Welcome back to the Kiddish Book Club.
Welcome back. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddish Book Club. L'chaim. Clink.
Classy drinking out of plastic, so the clinking noise has to come from us.
I hope that the mic recorded the clinking of the plastic.
A little boink. It's clink. More like a boink.
What movie was that when someone goes clink, or she's just being an obnoxious drunk? I can't remember. It always appealed to me. She's like, oh, sorry, clink. Oh, no, it's from Friends. Rachel gets really drunk on a blind date, and then she calls Ross and leaves him a voicemail tells him what she really feels. Remember?
Yes.
And during it, she gets really drunk and she toasts to the guy. She's like, sorry, clink. That's where I got it. I like
Did you
that.
See there's a new movie coming out with that same premise? But it turns out that she thinks he ghosted her. Mm-hmm. So she leaves this long, drunken, angry email. But it turns out he had an accident and he lost his phone. So she and her friends fly to Mexico to find his phone to delete the message.
Oh. Oh. Well, that's a wild premise. We're going to fly all the way to Mexico to delete a voice message.
Yes.
I don't know if that works for me. But okay, I would still see it.
You know.
So today we're talking about how character deaths really, really get you.
Or not.
Or not.
Because
Fine. That's fair. That's fair. Which character deaths don't get you? Let's start with those.
Well, so here's the thing. Most of the books I read, the character deaths are either...
Okay.
Pre-reading, as in...
You knew already.
Well, so, like, I have several books here where a parent dies or someone dies ahead of time. Or I read a lot of mystery novels, and you don't know the dead person, so you almost kind of don't care. But they kick off all of the action. So there's a dead body every time, but it's a lighthearted death.
Oh, so that's one category. The category of you need the death in order to start the book.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any situations where you've read a book like that, and you're like... slowly, but over the course of the book, you start to wish you'd gotten to meet that person, or...
No, actually, never, but, I did read one book series, and I'll have to look it up. So one, there's one that's by Nora Roberts called Shelter in Place.
Okay.
And there's another series, and both of them involve a shooting. And in Shelter in Place, it's a shooting carried by high school students at a mall. So there are deaths in there that were quite, like, I cried. I was bawling reading this book. Bawling and bawling and bawling. And the other one is a romance series where all of the main characters are survivors of a high school prom shooting.
Oh.
And so one of the main characters, like, her sister dies and the friend. So, like, that really shook me just reading about, like, their experience. And, it's all flashbacks at that point. And so you don't know these people and they're not really necessarily... crucial to the main plot of the story, except how they impact the survivors who are around. So those are the ones I read recently where, like, the deaths were just... And it wasn't even a character. We're going to talk about other books where the characters were someone who you had actually followed along with and you cared about them, and then they were killed. But these are people who, in the telling of their deaths, you care about them.
Yeah.
So it's almost backwards.
Yeah, I think there was a post-9/11 book like that. I can't remember which one it was, but, like... 5 people after they die. If anyone remembers, just let me know. But yeah, you start to care about them after their deaths. But again, it's still from the perspective of them, right?
Yeah,
so that's a little bit different.
Exactly.
But we're talking now about, what happens when you fall for a character, think a character is just the best. And then I'd say the classic is right in front of me on this list, Beth March. Spoiler alert! If you haven't already figured out that in Little Women, Beth dies...
100 years later.
Then I'm sorry for spoiling it for you. There are some things that haven't changed in Little Women. For example, she gets paid for her work.
I saw that.
The same exact thing that nowadays people get paid for their articles.
Yeah.
What, $25 to $50? I mean, that's,
Yeah.
The industry still pays less than $50 for you to post an article online. But how did it, when you read Little Women, do you remember?
Gosh, it was funny because, we started with this list from Bustle with top literary deaths. And I looked through and I'm like, oh, I've read almost all of these. But I read them such a long time ago
that
I don't even remember it necessarily happening, except in that, oh yeah, I guess that did happen way. But I'm sure at the time it impacted me. You know, there is one where I thought about that. There was a death in Ender's Game, mm-hmm. that was quite impactful, because they're children and, you know, they were fighting and all that. And I'm trying to think of another one where, I mean, Harry Potter, obviously, I read more recently than any of the books on the list. That was the most recent one I'd read, which is funny.
The different characters. I feel like we can hear my kids running around the house. Oh, that's okay.
We'll listen to it.
We live in homes. This is our life now. Yes, this is our life now. Okay, so, the Harry Potter deaths were definitely hard because you got to know the characters over time. And it was almost shocking to take a character through 5 books and then lose them.
And still, some of the characters hit me more than others. And I don't know how spoilery we're going to get about Harry Potter. I mean, it's been a long time, people. But some of the deaths really hit me more than others. Some of them I was like, eh. Like,
well, which Harry Potter deaths got you? Now, spoiler alert. Here we go.
You know, I'm going to mix up which twin died. But the one
of here. I think it's actually twins. On this list. Because this, yes. Tonks. Fred Weasley.
Oh, Tonks.
That one got me.
That was devastating because, I liked her. I kind of, you know, felt kinship. And then, you know, you think about the story of her finding acceptance, family, love, making, you know, starting a family and then going away.
Yes.
And it's just like, or going away, a euphemism, as it were. But, like, leaving that. And so there are fan fictions where, you know, they follow Teddy, I think, is the baby's name.
Oh, the baby after. That was so sad to me. It's like they left their baby at home to help Harry, and then that was just really sad.
So there are ones where they talk, you know, where it goes through Teddy or where they didn't die, and it's like speculative alternate universe where that didn't happen. And, you know, I think that hit a lot of people. So
yeah. And then what about Fred Weasley?
Yeah, so Fred also, you know, I think it wasn't even his death specifically that was a problem. It was, again, I associate with the survivors. So for me, it was just knowing that his twin was now bereft. And the idea that, like, that there was someone going on without him. And maybe that's where I
had a hard time. I think they had big plans.
Yeah, so, like, some of the other deaths, I was like, ugh, you know,
but Fred
whatever.
Weasley, first of all, it's a twin, right?
Yeah.
And you meet his parents the whole series.
Right.
So you know the characters.
You think about his
hand
on the clock.
I mean, it's so devastating. Even to see Hermione erase her parents' memory of even having a child. But what about the memory of having one and losing it? You know what I mean? Like, that was really, really hard. Fred one. I was not 12 or 13 when I read them. I was an adult.
I was 25.
Right, I wasn't crying when I read the book. But it's hard when you have a kid to read about someone losing, God forbid, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That was hard. Well, that's... Hold on.
I think I do remember Piggy.
Okay.
From... brain death.
Lord of the Flies. Yes, that was hard. That was a rough one.
Because, again, you saw his earnestness and you saw, like, you know, I feel somewhat relatable. Like, you know, you saw that was based on a true story and the true story was the exact opposite.
Yes.
That they actually cooperated and they worked together quite nicely and they nurtured one of them.
That wouldn't have been interesting in a book.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, I've been kind of basing my entire childhood or my whole idea of childhood based on that book.
What? How? So, hold on. How?
Because whenever I say something, I literally call it the Lord of the Flies bus that my kids ride on. Like, I don't expect them to be better than Monsters Who'll Kill Piggy.
No, that's true.
Right? Where, in fact, if I thought, like, no, you're supposed to be, you know, English schoolboys who, like, buck up and, like, make it happen and carry your friend with a broken leg around and feed him and do all kinds of interesting things, like, I would have different expectations.
That's true. There's a reason we supervise our children. It's because... Lord of the Flies, right? When the truth is, like, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when it comes to kids, it's really hard to talk about. You know?
Game of Thrones was difficult for me for that reason.
Because I never read Game of Thrones, you're going to have to give me some backstory.
Yeah, so it wasn't even death, but just violence against children made it very difficult for me to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's funny because I'm a bit more of an empath, so I associate with the survivors... pain more than the actual death to the character themselves. I gave someone my Wool Omnibus. It's just a series that I love, and she's like, I'm trying to read it because you loved it. But every character I like dies. Why do I care about any of them if they're all just going to die? And I was like, oh.
Thank you. That's 100% how I feel when you make me love a character and then you kill the character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did you? See, I've talked about this before, probably on the podcast, is when I was reading Sarah J. Maas series, I had one random character who has a Jewish name, and I always wondered whether or not Sarah put the name in because it's like a friend of hers, because it doesn't match the rest of the story, where the character falls in love with the prince, and she's a medic or a nurse or something, and her he's convinced that she's... Hey, child.
Yeah?
There's a child in here, one I just shushed.
Shush.
Shush.
You're rustling loudly.
Loudly rustling.
Sorry.
Go.
Like a possum.
No, you cannot microwave a super pretzel like at 9:55 at night.
Like a possum and going through the dumpster.
Hold on, I'm
going
to put my kid to bed. This is how I put my kid to bed. Watch this, everybody. Hey, Audrey.
Yeah?
Go to bed.
Okay.
Okay, good night. Go brush your teeth. See, when your youngest is turning 10 as opposed to being your oldest, you just tell them to go to sleep and they go. Right? You're going to bed?
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, I don't even know what we were saying. Oh, Game of Thrones.
It's hard to invest in a character.
Oh, yes, the character in...
she was a nurse.
Yeah, she was a nurse, and they fell in love, and they have, like, 3 chapters together. And then she gets, like... She dies, right? Yeah. Like, by the way, assume if you're listening to this podcast episode about character deaths, that every death we say is a spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry. We'll put it in the notes also, but yeah. Kind of aware.
I just got really... upset that, like, you made me fall in love with a brand new character. You made me finally feel happy for the prince that he gets love and he moves on.
You know, I felt that way with Hunger Games with the 2 deaths, Prin and Prim and what was the other one?
Her sister.
And you're like, for the love of all that's good in the world, you can't show us like a sweet cinnamon roll and then kill it.
Yes.
Because that's like
the little girl who dies in the Hunger Games and the sister.
You know, when you feel like a warrior dies, it's a warrior's death, and there's some amount of honor to it, and, you know, it may be done in a shocking way, whatever, but those were innocents. Yeah, right, those were innocents, and that was a bit more shocking, so I do remember that one.
Well, which is, I guess, the point of the Hunger Games is that it's supposed to be shocking, right? It's supposed to be shocking, like, you're literally sticking, you know, a kid who's, like, 12 years old. And you're like, let's stick them in this place where they all have to actually die.
And I think that death, actually, I cared more about the death itself than any of the survivors. Where, I mentioned Harry Potter, I cared a lot about the survivors' feelings for the death of the character as much as it. In those, I don't care about anyone who survives.
Right, because you're like, I feel bad for this child having your life taken away.
Everyone is somewhat, lacking compassion, and they're all kind of hard people. Yeah. So I didn't feel like they necessarily would feel it as hard.
Right, also they're kind of used to it.
Right, exactly.
Right, like every year there's a whole bunch of people stuck in the Hunger Games and every year only one survives. It's not like they're not used to and expecting character deaths.
Right.
Right.
In fact, that's the whole point is that Katniss saves her sister from what they expect will be death because...
Well, what makes me sad about that is, in book 3, Katniss goes off with her separate group. Her sister becomes a nurse. And Katniss goes off with their separate group to try to make their way through these underground roads to the center of the capital. All the while, her sister's with a group that's just above ground, that's just like marching on the capital, and her sister gets blown up. And what does Katniss accomplish? Right? In the end, all of that stuff that Katniss goes through, she doesn't actually accomplish what she tried to accomplish in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is saving her sister.
Right. That's literally her entire motivation the entire time is for nothing.
Yes. Yeah, I hate that. That's like the Star Wars thing. We were just watching episode 3 the other night. I know, it's hard because...
Star Wars spoilers, just as a warning.
The whole thing. Anakin becomes Darth Vader.
Yeah.
There's a scene where...
He does!
Anakin wants to go to the Emperor Palpatine and say to Emperor Palpatine, like, listen, you know some pieces of the dark side that can teach me how to rescue my wife, my girlfriend Padme from dying in childbirth, because my mother died in childbirth, I never got to know her, I don't want my child to go through that, so you don't have to, I don't want to be part of the dark side, but some balance would be good, why don't you teach me that thing? And when he shows up, he figures out that the Emperor is evil, he's a Sith or whatever, something like that, and he gets there and he's like, wait, my fellow Jedi guy, played by Samuel Jackson, is going to kill the Sith guy, but the Sith guy hasn't taught me how to rescue my wife yet. And in that moment, he chooses to save the evil guy instead of his friend. And, how he goes from, I just need to save him so he could teach me how to save my wife, and jumps to, I'm going to murder a bunch of younglings, and then I'm going to almost kill my own wife in 30 seconds or less. Yeah. He has no development. There's no he just goes all in.
Kylo Ren is the same way.
Yes, he just goes all in. Yep. He's like, well, now
I'm
that
I'm pull
here,
my pants up real high.
Yes.
Look sad and just start killing people.
Exactly. If you don't get to the character development of, you know, and so here's what's crazy is he does all that and he finishes the episode with being told that he murdered his wife, which isn't true. But they lie and say, you killed your wife. And he's like, I did all this for nothing. Right? Like, that is where you're abusing a character death in order to have someone else grow. Which is what we call, do you know the word? Ugh. Fridging.
Fridging. I hate it.
Fridging is...
I hate it.
Yeah.
It is the cheapest of tropes. Mm-hmm. A woman should not need to be assaulted or murdered in order to further a plot. Mm-hmm. I think there are literally numerous other ways. Although I will say that, you know, we talk about that, but then how many are orphans? Mm-hmm. You know, even one of my favorite books, Fever King, you know, it all starts when the main character is orphaned and realizes his powers, and he's the only one who survives a plague where he gets his superpowers. So it's like a phoenix of the ashes or a refining of metal, right? Everything else, his entire rest of his neighborhood is burned away, his entire family, and he is the only one left to be picked out by the leader to be trained to use his powers, right? So,
well, that's different. When you're the only one left, right? It's more like showing how a person can rise from complete devastation.
Right.
Right? From their own complete devastation.
Right.
It's not that one person had to die for him to go, revenge! It's that he could have laid down and died. He could have said, I didn't read the Fever King as I want to. He could have looked around him at the bombed buildings or at the ashes, at the grayness, and he could have said, I'm just going to lie down now.
He struggles through that, through the book about that, because now he is... His former people are still being downtrodden and repressed and exposed to plague. Mm-hmm. And he's very prescient considering currently. And now he's living a high life with the military complex where he's being fed and clothed and he is...
Survivor guilt.
Exactly.
Major survivor guilt.
So good.
I can't wait to read this.
I know, it's so good. I haven't read the second one yet, but...
A series?
Electric Air. Dude, you know...
Victoria Lee is up there?
Yes.
Okay.
And they have written two. Okay. And I don't... No, because I haven't read the second, if there's going to be a third, but it would not surprise me because there's so much interesting part. It wouldn't surprise me if they went with a prequel because there's all this history of like, how did the world even get to this place that they are
in? I like it when people write a prequel like that and go back to the beginning to show you how a character mattered. I would find it interesting if someone actually had a character death and then said, okay, we're going to bring them back in a prequel so you can enjoy them more.
Oh, God.
Wouldn't that be lovely? I would. I would enjoy that. I would enjoy going back and saying, I get more time with Fred Weasley.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah. Well, no. So, except wouldn't your time be tinged with sadness?
Yes. But I think that would be the point, would be to deepen my emotion about a later thing that happens even more.
So, I'm going to spoiler one of my favorite series of all time.
This whole episode is spoilers.
I know. So,
and that's okay.
Michael J. Sullivan wrote a series called The Riara Chronicles, and it's multiple series. It's like... four trilogies at this point.
Yeah.
And what really gets me is that there's one character. So there's a cinnamon roll who is paired with an assassin. And so the cinnamon roll, who is a golden retriever of love, and this assassin who's hard-nosed and known poverty and struggle and pain, and he just enjoys inflicting pain on others. They meet this... what's the head of a brothel called? Madam. And they kind of fall in love with her. One platonically and one in romantic love. And then a spoiler. So there's all this character development where this hard, really nasty assassin who really doesn't care for anyone and is out for himself and is really, you know, just walled away from everybody, slowly has some character development only to have this love extinguished. Ugh. And it's kind of like you've taken the impetus. Mm-hmm. And not just I hate to say prize, because that's not exactly what it is. A person is not a prize, but you know what I mean. Like his prize, for lack of a better word, for changing himself and being a better person is a relationship with someone who loves him and brings out that in him.
Aww.
And then they die. And so now what? Now what does that character do? Now it's almost like, see, I shouldn't have cared, because if I cared... you know, then it hurts. And if I didn't care, if I kept being who I was, this would be fine.
Did you read the Lurleen McDaniel books when you were younger?
No, which ones are those?
Those are the ones that were about, like real kids. She based her story on real kids and teenagers that died and had cancer and stuff.
Yeah.
I used to read
Yeah.
She made her living off of you, the reader, knowing that the main character of the book, who's going to be under 18, is going to die by the end of the book. And I ate those books up because they were the exact opposite of everything else I was reading. Yeah, it was like, I'm going to read Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High and Junior High. I like Junior High a lot over here. But then over here, I'm going to be like, oh, Make-A-Wish Foundation kids. Fantastic.
Weren't there character deaths in Sweet Valley High? I kind of remember there being some, like, car accident.
Yes, it got dark at some point. Wasn't there a car crash?
I'm pretty sure.
Someone's going to have to update us. I was just thinking of, in Looking for Alaska. Do you ever read that by John Green?
I did not. That was one of the few on the list.
Yes, it's on the list.
We'll link it so y'all can check it out.
It's really good. The Looking for Alaska book is wonderful. I didn't realize how much John Green had based that on the boarding school that he went to, and he really designed the setting, he said, to the point where when he went to visit the set of Looking for Alaska, he walked in and went, even though it's not exactly where I went to school, it feels like my childhood. So the main character, Alaska, she dies, and what's crazy about it is no one really knows if it was a suicide or a crash or whatever, but it's one of those moments where like the main character just wanted to find her, and then it doesn't matter anymore because they're gone. Like, that's really hard, and you kind of you have a character coping with what's the point.
Yes.
And that's a really YA concept, is a teenager saying person is gone from this world who I thought I could care about.
Yeah.
What's even the point? Why didn't they get to live? Like, when am I going to get those answers? Yeah. And there's a bit of a nihilism in that, or a fatalism, which I really enjoy.
Did you watch Veronica Mars?
No, but I've been told. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just watched the BBC miniseries of Pride and Prejudice for the first time, binged in one day. So I have not
seen
the things.
Fine. Okay. So Veronica Mars, it's very similar in that story genre, it sounds like. So Veronica Mars is a high school student who, her best friend is murdered. And she used to be popular and cheerleader, blonde, the whole story. And now she is like sassy, you know, alternate, you know, dressing and acting. And, you know,
that's the premise.
Her dad is a private eye. He used to be the sheriff. And during the murder investigation, he got knocked down because it was a high profile case, because it turns out the best friend was from a wealthy family and they were rich. And like it's a very wealthy town where it's like the haves and has nots. There's like a strong line. She's a has not, but she got pulled into the haves because of this best friend. And so they're talking like, you know, some of the kids are children of Hollywood stars and some of them are, you know, pro ball players and the mayor's kids and this and that. So her dad gets knocked down from being sheriff down to being a PI. And so she helps him in his office. And so she, you know, she just, like I said, just kind of knocks heads around and is trying to figure out what happened and to get to the bottom of her friend's murder. And obviously, you know, who do you trust? You know, who's telling the truth? Who's lying? What's the cost of finding the truth? What lies are you disrupting by finding the truth?
Yeah.
You know, is that the point? Will it satisfy you to know the truth?
Will it satisfy you to know the truth? I mean, it really wouldn't. You know what I mean? Like, think about any friends that you've had that passed away. I mean, would it really satisfy? I remember when I had a friend pass away a couple years ago who was only 24, and someone messaged me on Facebook who didn't know me at all and didn't know her to message me saying, I'm so sorry about your friend dying. I've heard about it. And I thought, what a sweet thing for a random person to message. And then he wrote, so I assume it was suicide since no one's saying how she died?
Oh,
and I wrote, what? That's gross. Like, that's disgusting. Yeah. No one's saying how she died because medical issues are private.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's not like we want everyone to know she died of this specific injury or brain aneurysm or, you know, whatever it was, like a blood clot. No one needs to know that. Yeah. That's private. How about someone died? It's sad. And just like poking into someone else's business because you assume something is suicide. I literally went back to this person. You don't deserve to know the answer to that question. Wow. Like, this is, you're an awful person. You're a bad person. You're a bad human. I need you to like look at yourself and go, why did I write that? Like, why did I need to know that information?
I will say I'm always curious, but I know that I have no right to know.
Yeah.
And my curiosity does not give me that right.
Yeah. But if somebody passed away and they wanted you to know how, they would have said something to you.
Exactly.
And like, there's obviously, people have that thing like, he died, he was only 27? Let me Google if he OD'd. Let me Google if the celebrity had cancer. I must know. And I'm like, why must you know? Why must you know? Because we all have morbid curiosity.
Yeah, and sometimes we feel like immersing ourselves in knowledge mm-hmm. will help. But
it doesn't. In the end, it doesn't. I think that's what happens is we go, oh man, those two guys from Glee, they both passed away. And which one was this one or this one? And it's a shame. But then we feel like, oh, well, if I can just tell myself that he was troubled and he took his own life, then I'll feel better. Yeah. I won't feel like life's so arbitrary. Well,
It's still arbitrary, man.
It's still arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's a desire to like get control.
Yeah, totally. I think that's hard. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes an author is trying to recreate that feeling. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard, though, because, you know, it's the show, not tell.
Well, it's okay. So right? a good example of that is John Green in The One with the Two Kids with Cancer.
I have never read any of his books.
Oh, have you seen the movies, though?
No.
So in this
I try to avoid death. This is my literal thing. I read murder mysteries and avoid death, ironically.
Oh, well, so me as a former Lurleen McDaniel reader, definitely soaked these books up. And then the male main character, played so beautifully by Ansel Elgort in the movie, who plays her brother in a different movie, but okay. He is dying, I think, of lung cancer. He's 17 years old. Wow. And at one point he holds a cigarette in his mouth. And Hazel's like, what are you doing with the cigarette in your mouth? And don't you know, like, she's going off? And he's like, no, it's, I don't light it. She goes, it's just to be like a screw you to the tobacco industry. Like, I'm holding the thing that could kill me between my teeth and not lighting it. Like, it's a metaphor. And she's like, that's stupid. You're still buying them. You're still giving money to the industry. Like, it's a whole funny conversation. Yeah. But for him, it's that feeling of, I have nothing left in life I can control.
Mm.
That's a really hard.
Yeah.
And for Hazel, her issue is she's dying. She's a teenager and she feels like her mom after Hazel. She's like, I'm going to die. And what are you going to do? Are you going to be okay after I go? Like your whole life has been about me for so long that I need to control finding my mother a place in the world before I go. And so everyone has something they show, don't tell, right? That they take and say, okay, I can have some explanation and some control in some way. When you lose a friend, is there any way to make it feel better?
No, not really.
Yeah. People always try.
There's
right?
nothing, yeah.
Just people always go, well.
Time.
Right.
Even time is still not.
It's the Best Little Women thing. She was a very sweet girl.
Yeah.
She was always very sickly. She died doing a mitzvah.
Yeah.
But no one's like, well, at least she died doing a mitzvah. No, instead they're like, poor Beth.
Yeah. It was a time when that was more likely to happen.
It was, yes. Hold on, we're looking at more.
Yeah, so I have this book series with me. This is Samantha Chase. She has a series called The Shaughnessy Brothers. It's a romance series. So there is a romance, but, you know, every character is slightly broken. And
I like the way you phrase that. Everyone's slightly broken.
So the Shaughnessy brothers, they're all brothers, spoiler, and then there's one sister. And their mother died when they were little, but they're at different ages. So, you know, each book is with a different sibling, and they kind of each touch on the mother's death and how it impacted them. But the oldest brother, it was very different than the littlest one, who doesn't remember her mother at all, except for the stories that her brothers told her.
That's so sad.
So she feels like she's never had a mother. So in each book, that person comes to terms with it. And it's funny because in this one I have with me is called Tangled Up in You. It's the fifth or sixth one. It's actually a cousin and a brother-in-law. I'm like, where are these people coming from? You're just pulling random relatives out of the woodwork here. The main character is a policeman who's injured he's not even injured in line of duty. He's injured off duty. And his sister's husband's cousin comes to town. Now, she's a war widow. Her husband
That's very
British
way of saying, sister's husband's cousin comes to town.
So her...
Does he come from the country?
She's a single mom because her husband dies in on a deployment. And so she... It's coming to terms with, like, he puts himself in the line of duty. Like, he could be killed at any time. Do I want to get into a relationship where that can happen again? Like, I've had it happen to me once. I've picked up the pieces. I've put them together again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And her whole thing to him is, you need me more than I need you. Because I'm a single mother. I've been a widow for, you know, 6 years. You know, I don't need anyone else. I can live on my own. So her whole thing is, do I want to take the chance of needing someone mm-hmm. when I'm opening myself up for that kind of pain again? Right?
Yeah.
Because it's not even love again. She's like, I'm loving someone who also is in a dangerous line of work.
Yeah. That's, right? That's a really hard thing. Like, you wouldn't want to expose yourself to... You figured it out. You've managed to move on. And you literally put yourself in the exact same scenario yeah. again.
But their whole thing was, he, like, I was shot when I was getting gum at the convenience store.
Right? The West Wing... Death.
You know, like...
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I never watched West Wing.
Okay, so you watch West Wing and I'll watch Veronica Mars.
Deal.
Okay. That is a good deal, actually. It is good. I think that's a really good deal. I think we'll both win.
I think we both win in that scenario.
Okay, yeah, so there's a Secret Service guy.
Yeah.
Well, now I can't tell you. Okay, fine. I haven't seen it yet.
So the idea is... You know, someone said, even if you marry an accountant, there could mm-hmm. be a bus accident, there could be a fire, there could be... You know, just happenstance, a brain aneurysm, mm-hmm. you know, anything really. You can't plan around that.
What's this book called again?
So this is Tangled Up in You. It's the seventh in a book series called The Shaughnessy Brothers.
Okay.
And so again, each person is slightly damaged, mm-hmm. And they take it in a different way, and you know, that's the whole thing. And they find, I mean, it's a romance, so there's love in the end, you know.
Of course. That's the rules.
And it's funny because the other book I brought, this is another, you know, so this is a trope very common in romance novels that, you know, the character is damaged from. So this is Heather Graham's When We Touch.
Not the same Heather Graham who performs as an actress.
No. So I think this is a pen name, because when I went to look it up later, it was under a different name. So I'm not 100% sure about that, but I did Shannon Drake.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's not Heather Graham the Blonde from Austin Powers. Okay.
So I think that, yeah. So so in this one, she's also a widow. And it's the same kind of thing where her brother holds the title and they're in debt. And so now what does she need to do? She needs to marry for money to clear up the name. She said, well, I've already had my one love and I'll never love again. You know, now I'll just marry someone with money so that my brother can come out of wet debt and get a good marriage and have an heir and all that kind of thing. So the kind of thing, like, you only find one love, and if your love dies, then that's the end of your story. And often in these books, that's not the end.
Right.
But it takes some time, not even to convince them outwardly, like other characters trying to convince them, but they need to inwardly convince themselves, like, you know, I'm going to open myself up. I'm going to put myself
feel
out there.
Emotions for a person and let that vulnerability and potential for hurt be okay.
Yeah.
Ugh, that sounds hard.
It's a lot. It's so that it is, you know, so there has to be some kind of conflict or stakes. You know, you and I have talked about stakes.
Stakes are important.
So that is the
edible
stakes.
Edible and book.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are the stakes in these books. So, and that's interesting. You know, we've talked about, we hate when we love a character and they die, but if they could never die, then the stakes are not high.
That's true. We start to notice the potential, like the shocking moment of Harry Potter maybe possibly actually being dead.
Right.
It's shocking.
It was, yes.
It's shocking because, but we get satisfaction because he isn't. Whereas at the end of Divergent, we don't get the satisfaction. She dies, man. And we're mad because we're like, okay, you made a promise. You had her survive so much. You had her choose a life. And you had her sacrifice herself at the end in an act that is not like her. This is very unlike her personality.
Yeah.
And then she throws herself at it. Meanwhile, this is a person who watched her mother get shot. And she
promised her mother to go on.
Yeah, she promised her mother to go on. And then she gets to the place where her mother came from and kills herself there.
Yeah,
like it felt like a betrayal.
Yeah.
And it felt wrong. And I by the way, I haven't met anyone that's ever said that they thought that was a good ending.
No. Yeah. It's funny because I just finished reading another book called Breakthrough, and actually it was very interesting premise, you know, and it's one of those ones we talked about in the previous episode where there's all these different threads and the author introduces you to like a scientist who's working with dolphins, and then there's a submarine and then there's a Navy guy, and you're like, that's so, and then there's a woman who's studying the melting polar ice caps, and you're like, how do all of these things come together? And it's amazing. It's kind of a great story. Until the end, and I ding it many stars for this. I took away a lot of stars.
Okay.
So there's some high stakes where there's some government intrigue and there's some characters that are killed. Several characters, some of them non-human that I cared about quite a bit more than the human ones. But then there's some like miracle, some because there's, you know, aliens. It's always aliens. And all those people are safe again. They all walk through the door and everyone's like, yay, you're not dead. And I'm like, I'm sorry. That you can't do that. You no. can't just miraculously save everyone who we thought was dead. Like, that's not... And so the end of the book, did anything change? Like, what happened? Was all of that...
I hate that. I hate a promise of stakes, and it turns out they weren't really stakes in all.
And also, if you think you saw someone die, or you're pretty sure they died, and they walked through the door...
With no hints or red hair or possibility, like, hints that that was...
Right.
Right.
There's you no as clues. A character, or you as a reader, how would you react?
If I was sitting in a room, and a person I was sure was dead just walked in... I would probably freak out like I'm seeing a ghost.
Correct. And they're all like, oh, you're not dead after all. Yay. High five.
And I think you had the dream where someone who's dead is in your dream, and you have that moment of, but you're dead. And it's scary. It's scary.
Yeah, it's scary and sad.
It's scary and sad where you're like, but you're dead. What are you doing here?
Right.
That's hard.
So this book, I thought like, oh, man, you basically like, oh, gosh. What was the episode, the show where he woke up and it was all a dream? His entire... It
never
was basically like that.
Kind of
and I was like, dude, you can't just dial it all back. I know that there's like some magical alien technology or something, but like, dude,
you can't just decide, let's bring them back to life and not have people properly react.
Although I do read a lot of books where you think someone dies and they come back, but usually they are a zombie or a vampire.
And everyone's like, oh, well, you're a vampire now.
Which is a very different way to bring someone back. This is not the case.
So, like, one character death that I thought... Okay, so the Buffy premise that we can at least live with it was that all of Buffy's friends, her Scooby, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The Scooby gang. They wouldn't die.
Right.
Right? So the main
but
character...
But anyone they make casual friendship with, they're fair game. So you better watch out.
Which is why Buffy's mom... was a complete shock.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you just killed a main character? And it's been, well, she's not in every episode. She's not essential to the slaying. So, okay, it's fine. We're never going to kill Spike, but, you know, the mom, she can go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the... But at least Buffy has the emotional, like, depth of being... completely overwhelmed by her situation and by any friends or people that die all of the time. Like, she never, ever, ever gets used to the death.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to people she loves.
I read an interesting book series where, I mean, there's a little bits of Buffy where she's a little girl and she's at the circus with her mom and little brother, and she sees them get killed by a vampire. And she grows up to be a vampire slayer.
Nice.
And then she encounters her little brother.
What does she do?
Well, he's a 4-year-old vampire because he did not die that day.
But what does she do to him?
I don't remember.
Like, does he evil?
I mean, in this book, most vampires are evil.
Right, like, what would you do if it was an evil vampire? Yeah. Like, would it be compassionate to kill them and send them to their, you know, a place where they're no longer committing evil acts? And would you be able to do it?
Would you be able to do it?
No.
I don't know. I think it would be, especially if it was that person literally embodied the exact moment you last remember them. Right? They haven't aged the same way.
Oh, that's too
hard. There's another book I read where this same kind of
premise. I mean, picture a 4-year-old that you know, right? Like, that's small.
There's a book I read with time travel where this guy, when he was like 14, he took his little sister to a fair. Don't go to fairs is what I've learned from all this.
In a book. Never go to a circus, carnival, or fair.
Yeah.
We know the rules. Yeah.
So, and his sister disappears. And so he gets time travel powers and he obsessively uses them to try and figure out what happened to her that day.
I've seen a few like that.
Oh,
did you see there was
so
a series,
good.
I can't remember if it was based on a book, about two black teens in New York who try to build a time machine for the science fair, and she tries to use it to go back in time to when her brother was putting his hands up and got shot by a cop to try to undo the situation. And
I heard about that
over and over and over again.
God.
It's like two geeky teens trying to go back and save her brother's life.
Oh my gosh.
It's supposed to be very good, but I never got to see it. Like, it just disappeared, the show. And I'm like, where'd the show go? So I think it was based on a book, though.
Okay. Well, it's worth finding.
We'll have to find out. Okay, we'll do some research, because the whole time travel to save someone is the time machine thing, right? In the time machine, he goes back over and over again to try to save the woman he falls in love with so he can marry her, right? He proposes, they get engaged, or he's about to propose, and she gets hit by a carriage. Then he's about to propose, and she gets hit by a different carriage, and then she falls in the ice. And, like, every time he goes back and tries... Good movie interpretation, by the way.
Yeah.
Every time he tries to go back, it's a mess and he screws it up again.
Yeah.
So he can't change the past.
Right. And I think those, and so that's hard also because you see the character die over and over and over and over again.
Same thing. Well, did you read Stephen King's book about the JFK assassination?
No.
So there's the main character basically discovers a portal and it takes him back and he's like, where am I? Like, it's literally a portal, I think, behind like a convenience store in near a bathroom. And he's like, where am I? And it takes him back to like 5 or 7 years or something before the JFK assassination. And he thinks to himself, what's something, if I'm back here, what's something I can change or do to make the world better? Because it's after World War II, but nothing major is going to happen for a while. And he's like, oh, I can, if I stick around long enough, I can make a little life here. And then in a few years, I'll stop the JFK assassination. So he goes back. He spends his time trying to become friends with the guy who shoots, what's his name?
Lee Harvey Oswald.
He becomes friends with him in one of the iterations. In another iteration, he falls in love and gets married, tries to take her back. Like, in every iteration, someone dies or he loses someone or he succeeds and the world changes in a bad way. And, like, the lesson you learn is, don't try to undo death.
Yeah.
Because there's a butterfly effect that's going to be...
You know, we saw that in Dara Horn's Immortal. Was that the name of that one?
Which one was it?
The one from the Temple Times.
Oh, God. Yes. So Immortal
that
Life.
One, Immortal Life. So that was...
Eternal Life.
Eternal Life. Thank Eternal you. Life. We got there eventually.
Of a different book. Yes. Okay.
So that the two main characters handled death very differently. Mm-hmm. Right? Very differently. Why suffer over and over again versus why not create over and over again, even though there is death at the end. Right?
Yes. That's a good book rec, by the way. Eternal Life by Dara Horn.
There's a lot of deaths in there if you like those.
There's a lot of deaths in there if you like those. There's historical stuff that's like back
historical
to the,
deaths.
Oh, base and Mikdash destruction stuff that is fascinating. And spoilers, I don't even want to include because they're so good.
But there are people getting busy in alleys. Just saying. That happens.
There are also people getting busy in alleys. It's,
I recommend these books to someone. They're like, Yonit, did you? And they sell the same. I'm like, yeah, but it's not important to the story. They got busy in the alley. But did you? What about the rest of the story? Come on, focus.
The Dara Horn one, I think called The World to Come or something like that, which is the one where it's the Joseph retelling, maybe?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, God, it was so good. It's about a woman who is a tech person who starts this company. I actually saw an ad for something recently where it looks very similar, where you record moments throughout your day and you can set up cameras around your house and in different places to record them for you. And they get filed away into categories. So basically, you can remember people in your life and moments in a full and complete way and not just in the photographs you choose to take. So like you can store photos and videos in a way that's much more comprehensive. So everything is in one place. Texts, conversations, random footage of them, a photo that you took, a video that you took, a TikTok that they made. It's all in one place.
Wow.
And it's the way it's described, a little more comprehensive than that. But basically it gives you the image of a complete person. And so she's hired to go to Egypt and helped the Cairo library, rebuild their systems, and while she's there she gets kidnapped, and basically they're like, hey, we need money, whatever. There's a moment in that book, here's a spoiler, you can fast forward 30 seconds, where you're convinced that she's been killed.
Yeah,
absolutely convinced for like 4 or 5 chapters.
Wow.
Because it takes us away from her POV for 4 or 5 chapters, and all we're left with is a video of her being hung. And we're like, oh no. And then it goes on to her family and then moving on. And I'm like, oh, that was sad. Yeah. But then all of a sudden it comes back. And I'm like, yay!
Wow.
But now you know that someone thinks they're dead. So there is the ways to do it where you can convince the reader, that someone's dead.
Yes.
And then have the other characters be appropriately shocked when they discover someone isn't dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that shock is more honest reaction.
It's a much more honest reaction.
Rather
Dara
than,
is very talented.
Well done for not dying. No, we thought you died.
But you have to give the characters that survive, they have to have done something where they're like, oh no, I only did that thing because I thought you were gone.
Yeah.
Like Tom Hanks in, Castaway.
Yeah.
Where his wife moves on. And when he gets back, she's like, but you were dead.
Yeah, there's a lot of story. That's the entire premise of... the Eden Turner one where he's from Cornwall. Oh gosh, what is that one called? Poldark.
Oh.
He goes to the American, it's a series, it's from books also, but they made it into a miniseries. So he goes to fight in the American Revolution and is missing in action. And so they assume he died. And so 5 years later, he shows up at his estate, and his father has died. His fiance is engaged to someone else, and his entire estate is in kind of ruins-ish because there's no one really maintaining it anymore. And he has to remake his life now.
He has to remake his life.
Where your entire family has already mourned you. Not only mourned you, but gotten up from mourning.
Yeah.
Right? The mourning period is over. You've been gone for so long.
That you just have to start over completely from scratch.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a few movies and books that have done this trope. The person comes back from being assumed dead, and the world has moved on, and they have to find a new way and a new life without everybody. Everyone else is gone. I think one book that played with the trope was Outlander, when Claire actually comes back to the past. And Jamie's like, I moved on. I thought you were... We all thought you were never coming back.
Yeah.
And she accepts it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, how often does the person come back?
Right.
They never come back. Once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, very... That's very
unlikely.
And
when they do come back, they don't get what they want. When they do come back, they have to move on without the other person.
Right. Or sometimes they come back and they're a different person. Yeah. Right? So especially those ones where they've gone to war and come back, right? Mm-hmm. They've been changed. Mm-hmm. They're not the same person. I actually read a book where one of the... They thought he was dead, and they kept it from his family. Someone saw him in a different town because he came back. So I think he was scarred or missing a limb or whatever. But because a different person entirely. And so they're like, it's not worth knowing. I did not. I think I saw the movie.
The movie was beautiful too.
Yeah.
In the book as well as the movie. Listen, the premise is we know that Chris Kyle is a guy who, while he was working with vets with PTSD, he got shot by one of the, Marines or soldiers that he was working with. He took to the firing range that day. No one knows exactly what went down at the range, but that the guy he was working with was just recently back, had major PTSD, and you know that Chris Kyle got the brunt of that, and he died. And this is right about the time when he himself had gotten over his own PTSD.
Yeah.
I love the book. I love the movie. But I was watching it the other night, and at the end, when they go to actual footage of his funeral, I just started sobbing.
Yeah.
I know he's a real person, so I don't think it counts as a character death.
Yeah.
But that character death,
yeah.
I was a mess for that entire... I was a mess.
No, I... You know, it's funny because I can definitely hear that even reading about a death, you know it's happening, you know it's coming, can still be very shocking.
It's shocking. It's shocking. I think it's almost worse that he's a real... Like, it's more emotional because you know it's a real person.
Yeah.
So you know that there are real human beings walking around right now in this world who have been affected by that person's death.
Yeah. I mean, I think I read something... it wasn't even a full book, but just a bit of about Princess Diana. And just leading up to her life and
every
death
time.
And everything. Right?
Every time.
I mean...
Every time.
I mean, that was a formative part of my childhood.
Yes.
Was all of that happening and unfolding in real time. So yeah, definitely.
Well, have you seen, okay, if you go on Netflix and you watch all the different documentaries about the Windsors and about Diana, depending on whose documentary it is, you get a very different Diana.
Yes.
If it's the documentary officially sanctioned by the BBC with
permission of the crown,
from the crown, and the only reason you even have this very rare document is because the crown gave us exclusive access to their archives. And I'm like, which is why this particular documentary called Diana's death a tragic solution to a problem.
Yeah.
Quote. Tragic solution to a problem.
Yikes.
And then it just moved on. Yes, her death was a tragic solution to a problem that the crown was having, and then they fixed it. I'm like, who fixed it? This is weird. Meanwhile, if you look at the Diana documentary that's just about Diana, you love her. But if you look at this one, it's she was very problematic, and she was bad for the crown, and she was very embarrassing. And I'm like,
yikes.
So I actually recommend watching them all.
Both of them? And
at
just
the same day.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't you just binge topics all at once?
I do. I often do.
Uh-huh.
And I felt, like I said, I coincidentally read 3 books in a row that had to do with shootings perpetrated by teenage boys.
Hard.
And I was like, how did... And that wasn't on purpose. I was not looking for it. It just... That was my stack. And I'm like, how did this even happen to me? One day, it's a week of Victorian England. And the next time, it's like all brutal, like terrorists. And I don't understand how this happens to me. But that is the thing that does happen. So yeah, immerse yourself in that. Make sure you see it from all sides. I think there's also, there is one that I do find quite difficult, is another trope that they use to either grow or break apart a, mm-hmm. a character or a couple is a miscarriage.
Oh.
So that happened, you know, this book I just finished reading was incredible. The Overdue Life of Amy Byler, just was in love with it. I was laughing. I was crying because there's a scene where she remembers a miscarriage she had. And how she and her, at that time, husband handled it differently. Mm. And how her life would have been different if that hadn't happened. Because there were, obviously, you know, it's not to say that that caused the end of the marriage. But at the same time, there were cracks that maybe could have gone on longer. Where that just set off a whole chain reaction.
Right, I was going to say, most of the time, a miscarriage doesn't, it's, you know, it doesn't end a marriage. It's usually right. a symptom. If your marriage is going to end over that, there's something else.
Exactly. And so she, and it's funny because the characters, she knows that.
Yes.
But she said, but she knows it also would have been different.
Yes.
But what would it have looked like? And how can you keep yourself from going down that path of regret where she's, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? Did he blame me? Do I blame me? You know, like what was happening, right?
It's one of those things I always talk about with people is there's things that you can't undo, right? And then you don't realize there are things you can't undo a lot of the time until after they're done.
Yeah.
And a lot of, and the things that you had no control over, obviously harder because it's like, I can't undo that thing that I had no control over and everything has changed because of it. Right. So that's one path. And then there's the character does the thing that like cheating, right. Yeah. That can't be undone. And the cheating thing is like, as the reader's reading it, they're like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You can't undo that.
Yeah.
You can't undo that. Once you do that, it's there's no going back. And then you're the bad person, right? Yeah. And then they do it, and you're like, no! Why did the writer do this to me? Yeah. So those two paths, I find that as a reader, it's definitely harder to have a character betray me that way.
Yeah.
But also as a reader, I'm like, oh, no, look at all these hard times they're going through.
Yeah. Give them a break.
Give the guy a break already. Yes. It's the give the person a break already thing that also makes me yell at the book. I'm like, can't they just have 5 minutes of happiness? Well, if they had happiness, it wouldn't be a very interesting book.
Oh, there was a book that I read, another romance novel, and it was called, oh gosh, my Goodreads is like a hot mess. And when you keep scrolling. So the idea is that she was a married to a duke.
Okay.
And he was avoiding marriage. I think I talked about a different one. He was avoiding marriage because he thought that people were marrying him for his title. And he was seeing her on the sly and not being upfront about it. So she tried to trap him into marriage so that she wouldn't be left, you know, without options. Can I?
Yes, you can have.
And so, you know, it was this whole thing. Well, it turns out that they had gotten pregnant. He didn't want an heir. He was very clear about the fact he didn't want to have an heir because he didn't want to put the trouble on another child that he grew up with. The idea that you're only worth anything because of your title.
Yeah.
So she gets pregnant and loses the baby and she flees thinking like, oh my God, this is the last straw. Like, you know, he hates me and all this stuff. And part of their healing was coming together and him showing her where he had buried their child and lovingly cared for the grave.
Oh God.
And of course, like I mourned. I wasn't happy that this happened, you know, because she thought this whole time that was something that he preferred to having an heir, right? So
what's
it was
this
like
book?
This whole, I'm looking it up. It's got Duke in the title because they all do.
Oh my gosh, okay.
And I'm scrolling because I fiddled with my Goodreads, so now everything's out of order. But it basically, reading challenge, there we go.
Okay.
Books I read this year.
Did you find it? You're looking for it now.
I'm looking for it. The Duchess War.
Okay, The Duchess War.
I think that was the one by Courtney Milan. Nope, that's the wrong one.
You know which death I was just thinking
about?
I read
too many Dukes.
I was thinking about the death in of Mice and Men.
Yes.
That was a hard one. Remember discussing that? So at the end of the book, he realizes his brother has accidentally murdered a woman.
Yes.
And that he doesn't want to see his brother hung.
Because he doesn't understand.
His brother wouldn't understand why he was being why he was being punished or tried. And as a mom, even picturing a child
terrible.
Getting, God forbid, stabbed, like, you know, or injured or kidnapped, and what you think in your head is that child doesn't understand what's happening to them, and they're like, where is my mom? Where are the people supposed to take care of me? Why am I in this terrible situation? Lenny Lahavdil, obviously, is a fully grown adult who has disabilities, but he doesn't have the mental capacity to understand that he committed a crime and that he's being punished for that crime. And his brother's like, I'm going to fix it, and I'm just going to shoot him in the head. Like, I'm going to take away, I know what I have to do. And it's, that's one of the hardest ones I've ever, it's one of the hardest ones. And honestly, I feel like the only reason they assigned that book in schools is for that scene.
Yeah.
So that everyone can sit around and discuss the terrible moral choice. Dilemma. The moral dilemma of making that choice.
Yeah. I think that's, it's very similar to the Frankenstein's monster.
Yes.
Right. You know, you've created the situation, erasing it is one solution, but is it the best solution to correct a mistake? Are two mistakes better?
Is it wrong that the brother did that? Like, should he have shot Lenny or should he have let justice happen? And was it, maybe it was justice, or maybe it's not his decision to make.
Right.
Like, can you play God?
Maybe there was another way. Because they often say that, like, whenever you're in a desperate situation and you see that there are only two options ahead of you, it's very much that there's a third or fourth and you just can't see it because you're too close.
Well, that's the YA novel, right? If in the YA novel, when you're, if there's a difference between YA novels are written for adults and written for teens. In a YA novel written for teens, oftentimes a teenager and a character really only sees two paths for themselves. Mm. They only see two options. And then the end, someone else has to present like, no, there's a third choice for you here. Or they pick one of the two options. When you do it from an adult perspective, it's done with like, the ability to look back on those years with hindsight. So if you're writing in past tense present point of view of a teenage character, and you're like, wow, if only I had known that the decision I made was not the only one. And I'm like, well, this book wasn't written for teens. This book is written for adults remembering being a teen.
So Pretty Little Liars, is that the one with all the friends and one of them disappears?
Yes, it's one of all the friends, one of them disappears, or one of them dies or something, and there's no adults.
And there's no adults, but at the same time, I think because they flash forward, they're all looking back at the way they acted when the first, when it all happened. And Allison, I think, is the one, the girl who disappeared or died or something.
A.
You know, and they each have their own regrets for how certain things went down. Mm-hmm. And some things that are still keeping them from move forward or having closure in the present. But they are able to look back and say, like, you know, I shouldn't have acted that way, or maybe I shouldn't have trusted who I trusted, or maybe I shouldn't have, you know, done all that. But that doesn't mean they're not making similar mistakes in the present as well.
That's also true. You know? I think the idea, like, is teenagers have such a hard time seeing that the world isn't necessarily binary, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That they don't have to make a decision right now.
Everything seems so important and so urgent and so life-altering, right?
And you're reading the other person's, and you're reading intent into the other person. Whereas an adult, we have an easier time just saying to a person, what do you mean by that? What a teen might say, he doesn't love me, or he wants to kill me. Like, you're just making all these assumptions without giving anyone the option to explain themselves because you see the world as black and white. Like, there's only one option here or the other option, so which do I think it is? Both are bad. And I'm like, well, how about ask?
Yeah.
Hey, dude, what's going down?
It's funny because I read the conversation starter for, you know, different things. One of them was, if you could go back to your 15-year-old self and you could only say three words, what would you say?
Ooh, it's a really hard question.
Right? And so my first impulse was to say, and please, excuse me, chicks before dicks, because my best friend and I, around the time we were 15 or 16, we did have a fight over a boy who turned out to not be interested in our gender at all, so it was really kind of moot anyway. But like, would that have actually carried me through that fight? Would I have remembered that? Would it have become my mantra? And then I was thinking, you know, could I do anything to avoid other relationship issues that I had, you know, in the future? Would I want that? Like, what would that have changed for me?
Right. Well, like, see, my first instinct is also to say, my life ended up pretty much where I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
So therefore,
don't mess with it too much.
I don't want to mess with it because the mistakes I made weren't so bad.
Invest in Google.
Invest in Google. That's a good tip. I like that. Buy Microsoft stock.
You know.
That's pretty much all I would tell myself because, like, I don't think, you're right. But if you could tell yourself something as a teenager that would spare you pain, but you'd still end up happy now, your life wouldn't be that different. No, assuming no butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Assuming no butterfly effect, what you would say, chicks before dicks.
Yeah, I think it only became a problem one time, but it is one time where I was like, that was really dumb of us to like argue with each other because we were best friends. And it wasn't, it didn't actually end our friendship or anything, but it definitely was a tense couple of weeks where I liked him first.
That's a priority for you. One fight when you're 15. I like that.
You know, because at 15, that seemed like the biggest life altering thing that could ever happen was that she and I liked the same boy. And, you know, like, that was the worst thing. And I could go back and be like, relax, it'll be fine. Like, you'll be fine.
I love that. That you're like, okay, if I could make my life a little smoother or happier at the time without changing my outcome later.
Right, because everything else would change now. Because I thought, like, you know, I fought with my parents about X, Y, and Z. But if the outcome had been different, then my life would be pretty different. So maybe I need to have those fights the way they were. But that's one fight that I don't think it would have made any difference.
It wouldn't have made any difference.
Neither of us ended up with the boy.
Have a stupid fight that was useless because neither of you ended up with the boy.
Right, so it wouldn't have changed anything except maybe we'd have had a smoother relationship. Which again, like we were fine. We got better. We laughed about it and then moved on once we figured out what was going on. But because that's the small stakes that you can do.
Yes. I think I would go back and say, you're not fat.
Ooh.
I think if I could have lived my teenage years looking in the mirror and going, I am objectively not fat. Because I look back at pictures of myself and I remember thinking... I'm such a big person. I'm so overweight. And being so paranoid about the way I looked in my outfit every single school day. Yeah. I would get dressed and go, I look terrible. I look fat. I look horrible no matter what I put on. But I wasn't. Yeah. I weighed like nothing. I was very small. Yeah. I was convinced the size 6 was so big and that I had to be, literally I was convinced if I'm not a 0, I'm like, and this, I didn't do anything about it. I still ate what I wanted. It's not like I was like, oh, well, I guess I should, you know, not eat anything, right? Because that's not how eating disorders work, right? You can't just decide. I mean, like, maybe, but I don't think you can decide to have one. Or at least fireworks. At least I couldn't. But I think I would say if I wanted to be a happier person, I think I would go back and say 15-year-old Jessica, which was the first year I think I became aware that I was paranoid about my body. Yeah. I would say, you're not fat.
You know, it's funny because someone also said, like, there's something that you say to someone that they hear in their heads all the time. So someone told me, you would be beautiful if you wore contacts, makeup, and straightened your hair.
Someone said that to you?
They did. And so in my mind, it was like, you would be beautiful if you looked like literally the opposite of you.
Yes. You have a beautiful face.
You know, but not even so much because you need makeup.
Right.
Right. Right. So like it's not.
Or you have a beautiful face can mean if your body was smaller, you'd be pretty.
Right. There's potential if someone did a lot of work that you'd be fine.
Yes. If you put in some effort, you could be. Stop that sentence. This is a bad sentence.
Right.
Right. That's not great.
I would actually say you are beautiful and it's okay to know it. And don't be like a YA heroine and just be like, I just wear my hair in a ponytail and like, I'm not pretty.
By the way, they're always described as pretty.
But they're not pretty. But they're not conventionally pretty.
Right. She wasn't
She was too
pretty.
Tall. Her shoulders were too wide.
A little gawky.
Her neck was a little too long. Her face was too, like something. Her eyes were too big. Too blue. Who wants that?
One of the things I thought was funny in the Pride and Prejudice miniseries on BBC was that there's a scene where there's this redheaded girl with freckles who's very pretty. And she's hitting on Mr. Wickham. And she's got money. And they're all gossiping about how, well, at least she has a fortune. She's not very pretty, is she? And I'm like, what? And then I hear, apparently, because back in the day, being a redhead with freckles in England.
Freckles were not a good look.
It was a bad look. And they were like, oh, he's going to end up with that freckle face. And I'm like, what? This is a pretty girl. But they wrote the script based on how people in that century thought of beauty. And like, it really just made me go, huh. Like, there's always going to be some interpretation of what isn't pretty and what is pretty. And going, well, where was that before? Like, when I first saw Rachel Weisz, the actress from The Mummy, I was like, oh my gosh, she looks so Ashkenazi. This is great. Like, Jennifer Connelly, look at these Ashkenazi Jews.
They're so, yes.
Right. That was like a revelation.
Well, it's funny because I had almost the opposite experience. When I read Philippa Gregory's The Other Boleyn Girl, and I was like, they're chasing the king. That's what he looked like?
Ugh.
I was like, ew.
But at least they were honest about that in the book.
That's fair.
Yes, they talk about the stinky leg and his inability to perform, and he never showered. Like, they talk about that stuff.
Like, that was literally the pinnacle of achievement, was to bed... That.
Which is why in movie versions, they make him hot.
Well, I mean,
it's too hard to cope with.
Right. It's hard to like immerse yourself in the story. I wasn't rooting for them to do it. I wasn't.
I know. I you almost know? Wish we could see a version with the way he actually looked. You have to remember something. They painted him that way, which means he was going to be much worse looking. Right? Like, to
them.
They were like, this is a flattering portrait of you. What does the actual king look like?
Yeah, it was probably not good.
Well, again, though, back in that time,
right.
weight was an expression of wealth.
Right, and everyone expected royalty to be slightly disfigured because they were so inbred, it kind of was expected.
There was an expectation of having some disfigurement, but there's also expectation that if you had money, and you were no longer in the military service, you should gain weight.
Gain weight, have pale skin,
for
because
women
you
too.
Sat in and you did
pale, a darker tanned skin meant you had gone outside to work in fields.
You were a laborer.
Yes. And that you were someone who couldn't have the luxury of sitting inside and being served.
Yeah. I was explaining that to someone recently because we were talking about tanning and I was like, I mean, it's only recently that it's the opposite, that you have enough leisure that you can sit and tan.
Yes.
Versus previously where you had enough leisure to sit in the shade, right?
Yes. Whereas I'm designed to absorb the sun and then feel like I just ran a 25-mile marathon because the sun, I'm like, I'm so tired.
Yeah, so
the sun.
The thing with this whole like quarantine is that I've been taking a lot more walks outside than apparently I'm used to because I've actually tanned when normally I just don't tan because my skin just deflects
the sun. Wait, aren't you
Latina? I am, but I am a very fair skinned. A lot of my family's quite fair skinned.
So that's presumptive of me to assume then.
Yeah,
that someone who's Latina would tan.
I just don't burn.
Ah, okay.
So where most people burn, I look like nothing changed. Mm-hmm. So like where were we? We were somewhere. And everyone was burnt. Oh, we were sitting on the porch, social distancing from a bunch of people. And afterwards, everyone was burnt. Everyone was burnt except for me. And I was like, oh, we're all sitting in the same sun. My face was exposed. My arms were exposed. I even think I had my hair up, so my neck was exposed.
It's good that you didn't burn.
I don't want to burn, but
it's
saying
it's a nice breath out to be like, sorry, guys. Well, it's like having a predisposition to getting bit by mosquitoes.
Which I do have that.
Me too?
Yeah, I think you and I last week, our feet were... You know,
and then afterwards it looked like I'd been like gotten an allergy to something. Like,
yes.
The mosquitoes here have nature is healing. The mosquitoes are returning to the wild.
Yes.
The summer is upon us.
And I want to lahavdil. But there are occasionally animal deaths in books that affect me sometimes even more strongly than a person's death. I hate to say it.
Okay.
But like,
give me an example.
So, you know, there's always a dog that dies.
Well,
that's
the dead dog thing is sad.
Like,
yeah.
People beat that one, you know, pretty frequently. I read a book where all the main characters were bats. And then some of the bats died. And that was super sad. You're like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's because all the characters were bats.
Died. Yeah. But it's not a person. And like got eaten by like another animal. And you're like, well, that happens.
Like you Bambi.
Know. Bambi. That happens off screen. And you still like, I think when you're little, you just kind of like, oh, it was scary. But like not the same way. Later you're like, oh my gosh. More orphans.
Yeah. That's the Disney way.
Yeah.
I think when I took my daughter to see Frozen at the time, she was four for the first Frozen, or maybe five, and the ship went down with the parents on it. And Audrey turns to me, because remember, that the first beginning of the movie, the parents are alive, both parents.
Yeah.
And there's two siblings. When does that happen?
Never.
She turns to me when the parents' ship goes down, and she, in the theater, goes, well, it's a Disney movie now.
Oh my God.
I think she was maybe five, and I was like, what? Every Disney movie she's seen, except for Brave, where the mom turns into a bear, which was sad enough, by the way, because there's a point where you're not sure if she still has human feelings left. Like, she's more of a bear than a
person. Are we going to kill this bear because now this bear is dangerous to people?
We've lost her.
Yeah.
Yes, she's become too much bear, and she's disappeared inside a deadly animal.
Not just the bear necessities. Sorry. I'll see myself out.
See yourself out. You and take your Baloo with you. Hey, Baloo is a lead in a lot of films.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
I like Baloo.
Yeah.
He was in...
the new Robin Hood. They're remaking that Robin Hood cartoon. I'm a little concerned about that.
And they make sure they have a hot Robin.
Well, we all had very confused feelings about the animals in that movie.
And if you ask anyone who their favorite Disney cartoon, the hottest Disney cartoon is, they will always say Robin Hood, even though he's a fox.
Yeah.
Literally
he was a fox.
He was a foxy fox. He was. Something about his, I think it was the
Prince
accent.
Prince,
Eric was pretty cute.
No, but the...
The prince from Princess and the Frog. He was a dilettante, but he was pretty hot.
Yeah.
Until he became a frog.
Right. I mean, you know, that happens too.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think those... I mean, the animal friends often die.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. This is a death episode.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Yeah, so they're... Well, now I'm mixing it with Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
Like, you know, the horse dies. She kills her horse. And you're like, what kind of person? So that's the other thing. It's like, it tells you a lot about the person, how they react to a death, or how they react to causing a death, or...
Well, that's why I liked in Frozen 2, the plot may have been a mess, but the emotions of the different songs are beautiful. The way that the songs were designed to make us feel the deepest level of emotion. Mm. Like, at the very end, when Elsa is like... This is my very own place. I'm the fifth element. This is where I get to be alone, and I get to be the most myself I can be without anyone bothering me. And as she's on her ice horse, racing over to her one place that she gets to be alone and unbothered by anybody. Sorry, I've been in quarantine with their kids too long. No one can bother me. She's literally crying joyful tears, which I would so do right now, and rubbing them off her face like with a big smile, like, I'm going somewhere I can be alone. She's so happy to be alone, and I felt that. And then the death, though, when the snowman, who, by the way...
Which, again...
I didn't believe in... Listen, I didn't believe that Anna cared enough about the snowman in the first part of the movie, where Anna was like, oh man, I have to keep the snowman alive for the rest of my life. That's kind of annoying. He literally just hangs out with us, and he's I created this thing, and now I'm stuck with him forever, right? Like, I would find that annoying. Like having Elf live in your house.
Yes.
You're stuck with Elf.
Yes.
He's not, it's like the Baron's head. Yep. What are you gonna do now? Got a bear.
Forever.
So, but when he died, the song that Anna sings is so heavy.
Yeah, of course.
Where she acts the way she copes by saying, I don't know what to do next. I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other and do one thing at a time. Like, what is the song called? The Next Right Thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to do one thing feels right to do next. And then after that, I'm going to see where I am. And then do one more thing after that feels right to do next. Which is why, like, when we have Shiva, there's things to do.
Yeah.
Right? It's not on you, the mourner, to come up with anything.
Right.
The rabbi comes over, he tears your jacket. There's a certain meal you have to eat. It's specific. You have to get... Then people come. There's always these steps that you have to take that make it feel like you can have something next to do.
Yeah.
And you know it's right because you've been told this is the right next thing to do. Yeah. So I think that that's what you were trying to say, is that the books that don't include that. The books that are like, oh, you're alive. Cool. Or he's dead. I will move on now.
No shame. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, I've read many a book where, like, the companion dragon, or there was one where the phoenix, you know, you're bonded and you're able to communicate, like, mentally with your mount. And then if one of them dies, you know, usually the other pair dies out of sadness. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is that, you know.
Hey,
you...
Ari. Hi. Why don't you just wait to do the dishes? Oh, he's so sweet. No, that's very nice. Okay. I thought he was, like, trying to do silent dishes. Okay. Anyway.
So the idea is that they, you know, they don't repair, because it's not, they're not mating. I mean, obviously it's not, it's cross species, but they become so close that they can't ever have that relationship again. Like, you don't ever let someone in that close again.
Yeah.
And so often the other of the pair dies. So there was a book I read where they were phoenix riders. And so that is, you know...
Do you remember the name? So hard.
I know, and I'm trying to look it up on the fly. Just so many listeners get,
like, a book about phoenixes, I'm in. A book about dragons, I'm in. And I always feel guilty.
A book about phoenixes, I did. Oh, here, A Crown of Feathers.
Okay.
By Nikki Pao Preto. And I've read other ones where they pair with, like the Mercedes Lackey, they pair with these magical horses. It's a very similar pairing where it's, you're compatico with them, and you, you know, mentally have a connection, and you, you know, work together to create good. And others, I think, where you...
Like Black Beauty, by the way. Like, books like that.
Exactly.
There's a lot of horse girls from the 90s, and I wasn't a horse girl. I wish I would have been, but horse girls are a very specific breed of human. The death of a companion horse, like, you always... Horse is such a big, beautiful creature that you really do feel, I feel like, more than when someone's, like, goldfish dies.
Yeah, it's very different. It's a very different level.
It's a different level. Yeah. I think we can't finish up without talking about the saddest movie death, in my opinion, which is Macaulay Culkin's character.
Oh my gosh.
Bees.
I remember that.
I remember that. And the way she's screaming, he can't see without his glasses.
Anna Chlumsky
was great in that.
I remember
that. He can't see without his glasses. He needs his glasses.
Oh my gosh.
The shock of it, of knowing like a friend could, at that age, a childhood friend. So we saw the book announcement the other day that looks really beautiful. A middle grade book, which is great because I know, again, the Lorraine McDaniel books were all about the dead person, but never really about people left behind. So Linda Epstein, who is a wonderful literary agent, is also a writer, and she has written a book called Repairing the World.
I saw that.
Which is English for, you know, Tikkun Olam. And the book is about a girl, a middle school girl, whose friend dies, and she's like, where do I belong now? And she discovers how to heal through the Jewish prayer for healing, but also through making new friendships. So it's like, it's a book about what do you do after. But from a Jewish kid, which I'm like really excited about.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yes, because there's something, you know, about a morbid book that I really love. But even the way she advertised it, she's like, you will need tissues.
Oh my gosh. I usually avoid those, which is, again, ironic that I multiple times in the last couple weeks have read books that had me bawling, bawling because I usually don't like those at all. I avoid them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm excited. So that's what's coming next.
Yeah, this is something to look forward to.
Something to look forward to is a book about a kid healing from someone's death. And Bali. This is the episode where everyone dies.
Everyone dies.
Unless they come back, like Olaf.
Spoilers.
But Olaf's never really alive anyway.
You know, I'll tell you that also, just jog my Doctor Who moment, is that I did not know that Doctor Who, that the Doctor would regenerate into a new Doctor.
Okay. You just thought they were recasting.
I just had no idea. I didn't know anything about it. Okay. I hadn't really watched. And so then I started watching it, and all of a sudden he regenerated, and I was like, literally shook to the core.
By the way, I didn't know that that's how they transition either. Since I don't watch, I always just assumed that every time the Doctor quits the show, they're like, let's just recast them.
So yes and no.
And they'll become the premise of the show is that we just, every couple of years, like soap operas.
But he kind of like a death and rebirth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because he's a different person with a different personality and this and that. Literally shook me to the core. I didn't pick up the show again for like 5 years. I kid you not. Shook me. Could not take it. I was like, wait, what do you...
Never seeing a character again is hard.
I was like, you can't just do that to me. I was invested in this Doctor. This was my Doctor.
I think that one more good thing we can end with this guy is Snape death was hard, but the shocking death that you were like, is this real? Is Dumbledore.
Yeah.
That when, even though I read it in my 20s, it was still, is it real? Is he really dead? Kind of like when you're reading, did you read Wicked?
No, I haven't read it.
Oh, God. So there's so many good ones. Greg McGuire wrote Wicked, which is the Wizard of Oz thing, right? Glinda is the good witch, and they're best friends with Elphaba, who's the green witch, right? Fine. In, as everyone knows, the idea is that Elphaba is melted, right? But not really. Elphaba kind of just disappears. No one really knows which it is. In the Broadway show, she pretends to melt. In the book, she's actually supposedly killed. And the world has to move on. And her friends, and Fiero, and Glinda, they have to move on knowing that their friend is dead and that the world has to go on without her. Except that 4 books later, the last line of the last book is Glinda is in prison. And all of a sudden, someone breaks her out. And Glinda says to the person, we don't know who it is, I'm waiting for you. I've been waiting for you? Who? Obviously, it's Elphaba. Obviously, but there's been no book since. So now we're all of us, for years, sitting around going, wait, what? You had a character death. You took us through 3 books of learning to cope with it. And then you gave us hope, which we were happy about, but then you gave us nothing after
that
hope.
Radio silence. How can you toy with our emotions that way?
You toyed with our emotions. You finally gave us what we've been wanting this whole time was hope, and it was the last line.
That's the worst.
You didn't even give us time to figure out whether or not there was anything to the hope.
The worst.
So that's a good one. Okay, I keep saying we're going to end with it. That's a good one. You can find the Kiddush Book Club on Instagram at Kiddush Book Club. And I'm on Twitter at Hoffman Jess.
And I'm Yonit DM everywhere.
She's everywhere. Thank you for joining.
Have a good night.
Binu, Umaokenu, Moshienu, Uelokenu, Uabinu, Umaokenu, Moshienu. Malkeinu, Moshienu, Elokeinu, Avinu.